The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, December 16th, 2019.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
And welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, and engineer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, what a wonderful morning it is here in Sonoma County. I'm very excited and honored to have Kolika Siegel, President of the California National Organization for Women and Executive Director of the California Now Foundation, and she's going to be joining me in the studio. She also chairs the California Now Political Action Committee, and I'm really excited that she's going to be joining me. She is coming from Sacramento, so we're just going to have our fingers crossed. Let's say that. Also joining me on the phone will be Sabria Brie, one of the leaders of Indivisible Sonoma County. A bit about Indivisible Sonoma County. Their mission, the Indivisible Project mission, is to cultivate a grassroots movement of literally thousands of local individual groups, to elect progressive leaders and realize bold progressive policies to rebuild our democracy and defeat our current president's agenda. It's really, really amazing. Well, you know, it's been a real exciting weekend, I have to say, for sure. What happened on Sunday was very interesting. I want to read something. There's a group called IOLERA it's called the Independent Office of Law Enforcement Review and Outreach, IOLERA. Oh, and what is happening is this is a monthly meeting, and it's supposed to be kind of a looking oversight in a way for the sheriff and law enforcement here in our county. And a lot of its members became a little bit frustrated and decided that they're going to take it to the ballot. So it's real interesting. I went to the meeting. They had a fundraiser, and you'll see petitions circling around. And I want you to mark your calendars for January 20th, because what's going to be happening is Susan Lamont, who is one of the coordinators for this organization and this group that's doing this, is going to be on our show. And a real interesting thing happened, too. We were given tickets to go to the 6th Street Playhouse, and we were able to see the play Oliver. And I want to do a shout-out to all the young actors. It was just amazing. Ken and I actually got to sit on the stage. I have never had an experience like that, watching all the different changes, all the different costume changes, and all the different wonderful things that folks do. It was very, very exciting. And also there's a reminder, and I'm hoping to be there tonight, an evening with author Dr. Sally Roche Wagner. It's going to be at the main library in downtown Santa Rosa from 7 to 9 o'clock tonight. And she's going to be doing a presentation on the women's suffrage movement. You know, as we move into 2020, we are going to be celebrating 100 years since women got the vote. And when you look at what's going on today, and when you look back 100 years, I mean, lots of things have changed. Lots of things have not changed. We're still struggling to get the Equal Rights Amendment. That has not happened yet. But at least we have been able to vote for the last 100 years. And one thing at the kickoff for the suffrage programs that are going on here in Sonoma County for 2020, one of the things that became very clear is that many times women of color were left out of the picture and left out of even they were not even allowed to vote. When the white women got the vote in 1920, African-American women still could not vote. So there's been a lot of controversy around that. And I just want to do a shout-out to all the organizations that are trying to make amends to that. You know, our women, you know, the way I look at it, the way I think about it, I think of myself as a woman first. You know, everything else you know, I'm a woman, you're a woman, and we're all in this struggle together. And it's very important that we make sure that all of us have equality, all of us have a place at the table. And that as women, we are all charged by the Creator, however you believe, to bring life into the world. I don't care what color you are, you do the same thing, you go through the same thing that I went through. You grow, you get your period, you fall in love, you have babies, all that stuff. It doesn't matter what color your skin is or what your religion is. So in my mind, the first thing to think about is we are women. That's why I love that song, I Am Women. I just love it. I mean, you know, hear me roar, it's true. Well, you know, our history is our strength. And what I'm trying to do of late is I'm trying to bring forward many of the accomplishments that that women have achieved. And it's interesting when you look at some of the dates. Like here, December 13th, 1993. Susan A. Maxman became the first woman president of the American Institute of Architects in its 35-year history. So here we have 1993. That's not so long ago that this was the first woman who became a president of the American Institute of Architects. Then in December 14, 1961, this was really shocking news for me. The President's Commission on the Status of Women is established to examine discrimination against women and ways to eliminate it. It wasn't until 1961 that we even had a commission on the status of women. And it's so interesting in our county, they even cut funds. I mean, it's not taken as serious as it should be taken. And then another thing that happened is really interesting. In December 14th of 1985, Wilma, I love her last name, Mankiller. I mean, can you imagine living with a name like Mankiller? Is sworn in as the principal chief, as the principal chief of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. She's the first woman in modern history to lead a major American tribe. Amazing, amazing. And then one last thing that I thought was very, very interesting. On December 17, 1993, Judith Rodin is named president of the University of Pennsylvania, the first woman to head an Ivy League institution. And, you know, it's really interesting. I want to do a shout-out. When I went to Sonoma State, Marjorie Downing Wagner was the president of the college at that time, and she was the first woman to be part of the UC system, and it really made a difference. It really did. So, you know, there's a lot to think about, and, you know, and what's going to happen at this segment is I'm going to be talking with somebody from Indivisible, and we'll be talking about a protest that's going to be going on tomorrow evening. But before we do, before we have her on, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about this this whole thing around the young woman, the activist who made Time Magazine, Greta Thunberg, who made Time Magazine's Woman of the Year, or it's just amazing, this young 16-year-old, and all this controversy around it. And then there was also a Trump, President Trump did a horrible tweet about this. So I want to go over the sequences that happened. So I want my listeners to understand exactly what happened with this situation. First of all, there was an impeachment hearing. And there was a professor from Stanford by the name of Pamela Carlin. And what she, here are the statement she made when she was talking about our president and about the right of kings. And it was very, very interesting. Here's her statement. Kings could do no wrong because the king's word was law. And contrary to what President Trump has said, Article 2 of the Constitution does not give him the power to do anything he wants, Carlin said. You know. And then she made some sort of statement about Barron Trump. And there was a huge, huge response about that. Just a huge response. And what happened is Pamela Carlin apologize for using the young boy's name as part of that sentence. And I really got to give her credit. I mean, when I heard her say it, I was watching the hearings. When I heard her say it, it made me feel uncomfortable because you should not be doing anything or saying anything about children. I totally agree with that. So then Melania Trump responded. And this is what she said. A minor child deserves privacy and should be kept out of politics. Pamela Carlin, you should be ashamed of your very angry and obviously biased public pandering and using a child to do it. So, in some levels, I can agree. I can agree with the First Lady. However, Pamela Carlin apologized immediately. And I can understand being in that atmosphere, you know, all that action and activity going on, a lot of anger and a lot of things going back and forth. I can understand how all of a sudden someone might make a slip and say something negative like she did about Barron. But now let's go into a few days ago when Greta became, you know, Woman of the Year on the Time magazine, which was amazing to me. Yes, she is a 16-year-old girl. And what's so interesting is that she's speaking out and trying to tell the adults in the room to stand up and do something about climate change. Right? You know, I mean, it's pretty embarrassing that this young woman has to speak out, that our representatives cannot understand and cannot get their feet off the ground and do something about climate change. But this is what our president tweeted. So ridiculous, Mr. Trump tweeted. Greta must work on her anger management problem, then go to a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Chill, Greta, chill. That's from a 73-year-old man who is the president of the United States talking down to a 16-year-old who's trying in her own way to get people to wake up and to do something about what's happening in the climate. Well, it's really interesting because what our First Lady said is that because she's working as an activist, it's okay to put her down. But as far as she's concerned, her son Barron, because he's alone and he's quiet and he's private and he's not speaking out, he does not deserve criticism. Well, I don't understand that. It doesn't make any sense to me. And the most interesting thing is that what Greta Thunberg did, and remember, she's 16. And you know, I want to say exactly what Melania said. Greta Thunberg, 16, who travels the globe giving speeches, isn't the same as her son, Barron Trump, a 13-year-old who wants and deserves privacy. She said in the statement, according to the Associated Press. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. Neither child should be put down. But Pamela Carlin apologized immediately. I'm not saying she's right, but she apologized. She saw the error of her ways. The president did not apologize, and then his wife supports him putting down this child, which is a form of bullying, and she's supposed to be doing the Be Best program. So one of the things that I would encourage my listeners to do is please write First Lady and let her know your feelings about that. It's not to put her down. Maybe, you know, she comes from another country, maybe her ideas are different, but maybe to help her understand what it is that this young girl is trying to do, and maybe she could be part of it, and to tell her husband to please stop bullying children. But, you know, so interesting what Greta did on her website, which I think is fascinating. She wrote as an intro, I'm a teenager working on an anger management problem, currently chilling and watching a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Well, I have to do a shout-out for her because that was amazing that she took that road. I mean, that's just like, you know, at the end of the month, we always do the Women's Spaces Pledge, which my self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. Well, Greta proved that. You know, she took what the president said and she turned it into something almost jokeable in a way. You know, she was kind of making fun of it, but at the same time, she was saying, you know, whatever you say about me is okay. I'm just going to turn around and just show you that I am okay and do it in a positive way. So that's a lot to think about, you know, and that's what Women's Spaces is all about. We're going to be thinking all the time. Oh, I'm telling you, it's amazing. Well, I have a little bit and I don't have any more announcements, but for this segment, I have asked Sabra Briat, one of the leaders and founders of Sonoma County Indivisible, which started in 2017, to come on over the phone with me and talk a little bit about something that's going to be happening tomorrow evening. Well, welcome, Sabra. Welcome to Women's Spaces. On December 17th, the night before the vote on impeachment of President Donald Trump. But before we get into it, you know, I'd like to talk a little bit about Indivisible, because I find it to be one of the most fascinating programs or organizations, really, that has started in the last several years. So talk about, give us a little background. What is Indivisible, and why is this organization making so much news, and what's your part in it? How did you get involved?
Well, we'll start with Indivisible. Indivisible is an organization that was founded basically by accident, because there was no intent to have a national movement, by people who were upset when the election went the way it did, and they sat down trying to think about how do we address this. Their solution was that they wanted to draft a document that would help people understand what to do to hold their elected officials accountable. And by drafting that document, groups all across the U.S. were formed, because people read that document and said, yes, this is what we're going to do. We are, for the duration of the Trump administration and hopefully beyond, we are going to hold our elected officials accountable. When they don't vote the way we want them to, we're going to tell them that they have disappointed us. And when they vote the way we want them to, we're going to praise them. And in between, we're going to tell them what we want them to do.
Oh, honey.
A sidebar to that, I'll get to that. A sidebar to that was, we were going to, if we couldn't convince our elected officials to listen to us, we would be happy to work for people who are challenging them. So Indivisible has promoted people demanding town halls and then going to those town halls and closely questioning their representatives. We have massive phone call networks, texting networks, and postcard networks. We've written postcards to people who are in office, and we've written postcards on behalf of people who are considering running for office. And we've mostly written a lot of postcards encouraging people all across the U.S. to turn out and vote. And that's made an enormous difference in the last election.
Well, talk about what kind of impact has that had? What kind of feedback do people give when they say, for example, they get a postcard or something like that?
Well, if you're a voter getting a postcard, we understand it actually increases the turnout. If you're an elected official and you confront Indivisible, well, we've had some confusion, because Democratic elected officials tend to imagine that we're actually Democrats working for them and that we're all about getting Democrats elected. And Republican officials tend to imagine that we're Democrats working to defeat Republicans. And to some extent, both of those statements are true, because a lot of Democrats have joined Indivisible. But a lot of independents and a lot of people who've never been politically involved have joined Indivisible because we really see our nation as indivisible, as one nation, not groups of separate people. And we want our elected officials to hear that this divide and division is not what we want. And the more the Democrats embrace the idea, the more support they get from members of Indivisible. And the less the Republicans embrace that idea, and they have really rejected it this last few years, well, they simply aren't getting support from Indivisible members, because Indivisible members don't like the division that's going on, and that includes the division of extreme partisanship that's going on in Washington right now.
Well, let me just ask you another question. What are some of the specific issues that they're addressing right now? I know the elections are coming up, and, you know, we're going to have the primaries are coming up, I believe, in March here in California. What are some of the issues that you think are really the most outstanding in people's minds today?
Well, inevitably, health care is outstanding in people's minds, the high cost of health care. But for a lot of members of Indivisible, besides the specifics of health care and immigration and the environment, all of which are extremely important to us, we care about the adherence to the rule of law. And frankly, we care a lot about people being hypocrites. People saying one thing when the person they're talking about is a Republican and a completely different thing when the person they're talking about is a Democrat.
Well, you know,
both of whom have done the same thing or something similar enough that the similarity should apply.
Well, you know, it's really interesting when you talk about what's going on now. One of the most interesting things that I found of late is that there was an interview with Senator Mitch McConnell, I believe on Fox News, where he made a statement that he's listening to the White House. They're planning the trial rather than the way it's supposed to be, a very impartial trial. And it's kind of confusing to me that these things are happening. So in groups like Indivisible, would they write postcards about that to alert people that this has been said and maybe it's not true or whatever, or kind of educate them?
Well, to some extent, the opportunity for education exists, but just like you find that a confusing statement, I find it, frankly, illegal. For any juror in a regular jury trial who has to take an oath to acknowledge that they're going to lie when they take that oath, should disqualify them. That's just the way it goes. And what Senator McConnell and Senator Graham and several other senators have said is, we don't care what the evidence says. We aren't going to pay any attention to what the House had to say. We've already decided that Trump is our guy and we're going to support him no matter what. And so we're not going to adhere to that oath that we are required to take. I find that, frankly, deeply upsetting. But what Indivisible is doing is encouraging its members around the country to write to voters in the home states of these and other senators to encourage them to reach out to their senators and share their feelings.
Well, I think it's very important. And let's talk about now, let's move into the original reason for this phone call is because I think, and it's fascinating. I mean, Sabre, I'm really glad that, you know, we're having this conversation because people have to know, number one, they're not alone in their thinking. Number two, that there are people out there doing something, trying to do something, as difficult as it is, you know, and groups like Indivisible are grassroots and it's people and they're volunteers. Everybody's a volunteer. So it's an amazing, amazing group. So let's talk about what's going on now. It looks like I got some information off the internet and it looks like groups like Common Cause, Move On, March for the Truth, Progressive Mass, and also Indivisible are all going to be involved in some sort of gathering or protest around impeachment. So can you discuss that and tell us what is that all about? What is the purpose of this gathering?
One of the concerns that everybody seems to have in the world of punditry is that there is no support for impeachment. Now, 54% of the population, as near as polls can tell, about 54% support impeachment of President Trump for what he has done, which is to put his own needs, his own political future above the needs and the future of the U.S.
But also he violated the Constitution.
Oh, of course he violated the Constitution to do that. That's not allowed. And people who doubt this simply need to take a moment back and go back to whenever it is they took a class in government, and if they were lucky enough to do that.
But also, I think as a nation, for some reason, you know, we're so wound up in all this consumerism, and you got to make it. And, you know, to me, when I think of the American dream, I think of my grandmother. My grandmother, when she came over from during the early 1900s from Europe, her American dream was to be free. Was to be in a country that offered opportunity and did not, you didn't have to worry about the police breaking down your door. That was the American dream to her. Today it seems like the American dream seems about consumerism. You got to have the best home, the best car, all these other things. And we lose sight. And I don't know if you agree or disagree with me, but we lose sight of the fact that we have this beautiful document, which is not a perfect document. It did not start out perfect, but the good news about it is it's got flexibility to where we can make changes. And we, like, women got the vote. At one time, women didn't get the vote, you know. At one time, we had slavery. Now we don't have all the different things that have allowed us to move forward because of our Constitution. And people have to understand that this is a violation of our laws of the land, and that we have to ask ourselves, what type of country do we want to maintain? I mean, it's just, you know, I think about this whole thing about rights of kings, you know, or dictators. It's very, very scary to me. So I think people need to recognize that this is not just impeachment. This is about our Constitution and living under the law. And we, if you go into a supermarket and you steal a steak, you're going to pay for it because it's against the law. Well, this is a little bit higher than stealing a steak.
Well, and this goes back to what he did. You know, he didn't steal a steak, and he didn't steal any money. What he did was use the leverage that a president has to try to get another country to make an announcement, not to do anything else, not to conduct an investigation, to make an announcement that that country was investigating Hunter Biden and the company for which he worked, in order to create, an impression that everybody's bad, everybody is interested only in themselves, everybody's trying to make money out of the government, and only Donald Trump is honest about it. This is the same thing he did during the 2016 election, when he over and over again accused Senator/Secretary Clinton of being corrupt without ever offering any evidence to prove it. Nobody could find, and they looked, evidence of her corruption. There are people all over the U.S. who believe, sincerely believe, that she was corrupt because they heard it so much, not because she was corrupt.
Well,
however, he uses this as a tool, and when he couldn't come up with anything that proved that Biden was as guilty as Trump sees himself, he was quite happy to try to manipulate another government, not into doing an investigation, but into announcing an investigation. Because honestly, with the Justice Department behind him, that investigation could have, should have started here if there was anything to find.
Well, you know, it's just a real interesting thing, because what I think the reason he wanted that announcement was is so you would plant a seed of doubt. So let's talk about what's happening on Tuesday night.
Yes.
And if you could give us the time and the place and who's
so
involved.
At 5:30 at Courthouse Square in downtown Santa Rosa, hundreds of people will assemble with their lighted signs and their lighted bodies and their glow sticks and their voices to be part of this national movement that shows the support individuals have for impeaching this president.
Well,
and if we don't hold this president accountable for his behavior, for this kind of self-dealing that he has engaged in, what we are doing may not be so much what he does in the future as it is what we now say presidents can do in the future.
But also,
because that's what we're doing. We're saying, using the federal treasury, using the laws, using the power of the presidency to create a false impression, to manipulate another government in order to benefit the president, is completely acceptable behavior. And that's not behavior we would accept from a coworker or a boss, from a child or a teenager or a brother-in-law.
Well, it certainly is some really amazing times. And I think the most important thing out of this conversation is people have to realize that our way of life, our constitution, our constitutional laws are really in jeopardy. Because if people have said, and also impeachment, even if they impeach him and it goes to the Senate and they don't get a trial, if the idea that he was impeached, that they did, there is a record of a wrongdoing, and that this took place, whether they go all the way or not. I mean, let's just hope at least they take the first step, so at least we know that our Constitution is somewhat intact. Well, listen,
so we should have our representatives back, and we should tell them loudly and firmly all across the U.S. that we support impeachment. And for that matter, we should always keep in mind that not only are we defending the Constitution by holding this impeachment, but the false idea that it's not worth doing because the Republicans in the Senate will never, ever vote for impeachment. They don't vote for impeachment. It's the House that votes for impeachment. The senators vote to remove the president. They vote to say what he has done is bad enough that he should not be president.
And then it's up to them, and they're going to do whatever they want, and let us just hope let's just hope that everything turns out right. Well, Sabra, thank you so much for joining me on the telephone here and telling us all about this rally that's happening. So let me just make sure that I have the information right. That's going to be this
5:30.
This Tuesday, December 17th at 5:30 at Courthouse Square in downtown Santa Rosa. Well, yes. Sabra Murray, thank you so much for being on Women's Spaces and letting you know what's really happening on Tuesday evening in Courthouse Square in Santa Rosa, which is one of hundreds, if not thousands, of rallies that are happening across the nation. And now,
about 600 now.
Pardon?
About 600 rallies across the U.S.
600.
In every state.
I thought it was
every state.
Every state is going to have a rally. And thank you so much for sharing this. Listen, stay on the phone with me. I want you to listen to this next song that we're going to be playing. We're going to take a musical break, and I'll be playing Politic Kills, sung by Mao Chao. And I believe this song is a lot about what's happening in today's world. And, you know, I'm a little bit disheartened here because Kalika Siegel, it looks like she's coming in from Pardon? Oh, she is here. Well, oh my goodness, I'm so excited. I was getting nervous. I thought she wasn't going to show up. Anyway, let's take our musical break. We're going to be listening to Politics Kill, sung by Mo Che. And when we come back, we will be talking, thank goodness, with Kalika Siegel, president of California National Organization for Women and the executive director of the California Now Foundation. She also chairs the California Now Political Action Committee, and I am honored to have her on.
Politics needs your mind. Politics needs human beings. Politics needs lies. That's why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence. Why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence. Drugs, politics use bombs, politics need torpedoes, politics needs blood. That's why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence. Why, my friend, it's an evidence. Politics is violence. Politics need force, politics need cries, politics need ignorance. Politics need lies. Politics kills, politics kills, politics kills. Politics kills, politics kills, politics kills. Politics kills, politics kills, politics kills. Politics kills, politics kills.
Some songs before, but this one takes the cake. Well, for all of you just joining us, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I'm so excited. I want to introduce my guest. Joining me in the studio is Kalika Siegel, the president of the California National Organization for Women and executive director of the California National Organization for Women Foundation. She also chairs the California Now Political Action Committee, and I am honored to have her with me. Kalika, welcome. Welcome to Women's.
Oh, thank you so much, Elaine, for having me. I'm so excited to be here with you in Sonoma County and also to be a part of Women's Spaces. This is truly an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Ditto. Well, before we begin, I want to tell our listeners just a little bit about you. And where did you come? I didn't know if you were coming from Berkeley or from Sacramento.
Sacramento.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, I was getting nervous because I didn't know that you were here. And it was just amazing. And I really thank you for making the trip and being here. I mean, you're such an important organization. You know, now is almost about 55 years now because we celebrated here 50 years. It was just amazing. Well, let me tell our listeners a little bit about you. And then I have a question about some of the things you've said. And I'm going to shut this a little short. You know, I have a long bio here, but, you know, I want to make sure that we have plenty of time. Kalika is an intersectional feminist committed to a political action, advocacy, and civic engagement. She has spent the bulk of her career seeking to promote democratic participation and underrepresented minorities and improve conditions in communities of color. She currently serves as the president of California National Organization for Women and executive director of the California Now Foundation. She also chairs the California Now Political Action Committee, bringing to the California Now Board of Directors a decade of experience and leadership in Sacramento and the Bay Area in political consulting, pro-choice, visibility, actions, and campaign management at the local and city and state level. And I could go on and on about you, so is there anything else that you would like to add?
I think that sums about up. God, what an intro. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, you're the former commissioner of the city of Berkeley. I mean, you've just been involved. I mean, it's just amazing when, you know, women are, we have lots of energy. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, before, Kalika, before we start talking about now and how you got involved in activism and politics and what motivated you and inspired you, also, forgive my ignorance, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, but I would like you to explain what is intersectional feminism. What does that mean? I mean, all these new words that are coming into our world, I mean, you just have to scratch your head. So what does that mean?
Absolutely. A little bit about intersectionality. The phrase was coined by the great Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw, Harvard Law professor, to really explain issues within the movement. So to be an intersectional feminist is to truly be inclusive of the needs and issues of women of color, disabled women, our LGBT community, and to really bring life to the great Audre Lorde's quote, there is no single issue feminism because we don't lead single issue lives. So that when we speak out about abortion rights, we have to make sure that we're including reproductive justice, because we can't just talk about the right to a free and fair and legal abortion. We have to talk about access, which typically impacts women of color and low-income women, disabled women, much greater. They need access to be able to get to the clinic. We have to talk about centering the most marginalized in any issue that we approach. So to keep it really, really simple, the feminist movement has taken on lots of issues, but really hasn't centered race, really hasn't centered the needs of our disabled community, really hasn't. There's been issues in the movement towards our lesbian and gay sisters.
I want to just inject something
sure.
here. You know, it reminds me whenever I hear that, I always think of the scene in Iron Jawed Angels when Ida B. Wells came out and when Alice Paul said, you're going to have to walk in the back of the parade. And she said, I'm not walking behind anybody. But she was walking. She had to walk behind at that time. So it sounds like you're talking about trying to bring up the history of it more in today's world, and that this means to open the door for feminism in a wider perspective.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We intersectional feminists believe, forgive my language, that if your feminism isn't intersectional, it's really bullshit. If it's not an inclusive feminism, a feminism for everyone, bringing in our trans sisters, our LGBT community, the women of color, and really focusing on the needs of those marginalized communities, you can't really call yourself a feminist today.
Well, I believe, I wrote this poem, I Am Women, I Am All Women, you know, and I believe that's what you're saying, is that we have to integrate all aspects of what we mean as feminism.
Absolutely.
So I'll call myself I'm an intersectional
sure.
feminist, because I really believe that. I mean, mm-hmm. that is my belief system. In fact, my belief system is, when somebody asks me, who am I say, I am a woman first. You know, and that could have all kinds of connotations to somebody, because, we have our transgender friends, you know, there. I mean, there's all kinds of things that implies. So thank you so much for telling us about that. I mean, I feel, and also when I was looking at it, I says, how do I identify myself? Mm-hmm. And, it seems that this is becoming more and more important for women, that they do have that identity.
Oh, absolutely. We definitely need to be including the needs of our fellow sisters and feminists. And look at them as whole women and their intersecting oppressions. We would never leave out a woman who, older women or women with disabilities. We wouldn't do that. So we would definitely need to be more inclusive in our feminism and to take an intersectional approach. And it's the only way to go.
Well, I'm so relieved, since in 6 months I'm going to be 80. Must be classified as an older woman, right? Well, tell us, what is motivating you? I mean, I can tell already just by our conversation, but what was it that, that inspired you all of a sudden to become involved in NOW? And also talk a little bit about NOW, a little bit of their history and how you got involved, and what is motivating you right now?
I think that I was always a feminist. I was always committed to serve and to help with women's rights. I came out of the domestic violence community at Berkeley, and I wanted to do all I could to address the issues that were impacting women, whether it be rape, domestic violence, etc. And I just stuck with it as long as I could. When I got into now, I was at Berkeley. I thought it was an excellent opportunity. It was an organization that had a long history, even though it had a few challenges. I thought I could really contribute positively. And from there, also in the chapter at Berkeley, I started working with the state. I'm really getting involved statewide, sitting on the state board. I had quite a few mentors at the state level, some past presidents of NOW, and they were also, ding, 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 intersectional feminists. They wanted to see women of color, young women, come behind them and to really change the face of NOW. And bada bing, bada boom, I am the first African-American president of the California National Organization for Women. I am also a millennial, and a young person, a millennial, to see those come through. And it came from folks like you, have been laying the groundwork for us, really paving the way for us to take up the mantle. And I truly look at the feminist movement as a relay, not a race, but a relay and passing of the baton over. And they just really wanted to see it thrive and really to see NOW live up to its ideals.
Well, with all this transitional stuff, what were some of the challenges that you faced? When you start looking at even the suffrage movement, you see what the face was, and it was older women, it was older white women, when you look at the whole picture, what were some of the challenges? I know for myself, even to be older and be active, there's many challenges, and people, they think maybe you should be sitting up in some room, knitting or something. So what were some of the challenges that you have faced and NOW has faced with the transition?
I think that there was a little bit of resistance. I remember going to the national conference in Louisiana in 2015. Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw was actually there talking about intersectionality. It was really hard for them to put their minds around an intersectional framework, but we were able to get that passed into our bylaws, into the national bylaws, and I was overjoyed and thankful that we were able to get that done, and I knew that progress was going to happen once they started to embrace.
But remember, the reason it got done is because women got active and said, this is what I want. They were not afraid to speak out.
Absolutely.
And they would say, this is what we need. So go ahead, continue.
Oh, absolutely. In taking on even NOW and some of the old leadership, we had to be fearless. We had to absolutely be fearless because we were met with quite a bit of resistance. Now we have an all women of color board for in terms of California that did not come easy. Change never comes easy, but it is about people taking up the mantle and demanding change.
But also, if women have an attitude, when you say, women of color, and all of a sudden there's a feeling of threat, the thought I always have is, again, put yourself woman first.
Absolutely.
And what we're talking about, women are, we have needs for the children, we have needs for ourselves, we have needs for the family. Women take care of, women look to the future, they're planners. It's a very interesting thought. Well, the segment goes by so quick. I was going to take a musical break here, but I think we're not going to do it. We're going to continue with this conversation. The question I have, that you're involved in so many things, and one of the questions, by the way, just to let my listening audience know, when I have guests on, I ask them to send me 5 questions. This way I know what they're passionate about, and what I tend to do is I tend to manipulate the questions, to make them a little broader. But this was one that really, really, really struck out to me, and that is, talk about the 2019 electoral victories, including the advancement of the ERA. Talk about, women don't understand that we finally got somebody, I forget what state it is, we finally have a woman that was elected that might be able to move the ERA forward a little bit. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, people have been focused on 2020, but 2019 really, really pushed us forward in terms of the ERA. NOW chapters across the country have been working so hard for the states that have already passed, that have already ratified. They've been even you know, throwing our weight behind other states. After there were 35 states that made it to the deadline of 1982 deadline, 35 states. So we needed three more. So it was essentially a race to 38. And then Nevada and Illinois, so we needed one more state. They tried to get it done in Arizona. California chapters even mobilized to try to come to Arizona to help out with the process and couldn't get it done. I have a very conservative legislator there. And they also tried in North Carolina, I believe, but really, really aggressively start throwing money, weight, time, a full ERA coalition, our Nevada chapters, and the entire weight of the National Organization for Women really, really focused on Virginia and wanting to turn Virginia blue. And the last time they tried to ratify it, it didn't pass by one vote. So now that we have the victory and now Virginia is blue, we knew that the ERA was going to advance, and we're going to see it in our lifetime.
Let me ask you a question. Feminist to feminist. Why is it take? I don't understand. Why is that? I mean, equal rights. In other words, all this time, we don't have equal rights.
Absolutely. And people in my generation believe that's a done deal. They think that's a done deal. When I tell them that we don't have an equal rights amendment, we actually, it's not codified, they can't believe it. They have to go look it up themselves. So it definitely makes my work a lot harder when they believe that is a done deal. Didn't that take care of that in the 60s and 70s? Nope. It's still at play, and we need all hands on deck.
Well, you know, I want to tell those young women, I was very involved with the women's movement, extremely involved, and I'm still in shock that what's happening today, you know, just with some of the, just look at these anti-abortion laws. I mean, just all the stuff. And, you know, and it's really interesting. I hate the word abortion. You know, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. It's a woman's right to choose, period. A woman's right to choose. It's my body, not your body. Okay, anyway, now I'll get on that. Now, I don't know if you wrote this or somebody else, but if it's not your statement, then let's ignore it. Unite, grow, and celebrate. Was that you?
Yeah. Okay. This.
I had notes, and I said, because I remember that's what you said on the telephone to me. Unite. So talk about that. What does that mean, unite, grow, and celebrate?
Unite, grow, and celebrate has been California Now's board's mantra since we took office. And we stated that we were on a mission to unite, grow, and celebrate the chapter. So what does that mean? That means that we needed to unite and not be divided feminists. We needed to be all on one accord, one mission, one voice, as intersectional feminists. We wanted to grow the chapters, grow the membership, look for new leaders, younger leaders, new voices to come in and reinvigorate the chapters. And then to celebrate the past and what has come. It's been a many, many years now, has really been at the forefront of so many movements, and to really celebrate those and those victories, and also let the women of the past know that it's safe within our hands, that it's going to grow. We're going to carry the mantle for them. And so our chapter, our board came up with Unite, Grow, and Celebrate as a way to bring people together.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned about bringing, I know one of the things, we're all going to be going to lunch today, and I'm really excited about it. I've actually invited somebody from another one of our organizations to sit and just meet you and talk about it and talk about how we can grow. So talk a little bit, because we're starting to run out. I mean, radio time is radio time is another time. Tell us why you think it's important that people become, women become, men and women. I mean, now has never been exclusive. It is, you know, it's always been. It's always invited men in. And I'll tell you something. I mean, I could not do this radio show without Ken. It's just amazing. Behind every great woman is a great man, and ditto. And you are another great woman, or whatever. You know, I mean, that, you know, folks, you don't understand that how hard as women we work so we can have choice.
Choice.
For God's sake, choice. Okay, so
let's
how
get
can
that
someone,
on a billboard.
Why is it important for? What is important about belonging to Now, and how can people become members? Because we're certainly trying to grow our chapter here.
I think now more than ever, especially with us finally getting around to getting the ERA ratified for us to unite, grow, and celebrate, and to mobilize around also getting this Trump out of office, and to have all hands on decks for 2020. And what you can do is, for California, you can go to www.canow.org to sign up for membership. We'd love to get you involved with our chapters. For those listeners out there, we'd love to get your hear your ideas, and to collaborate with other feminists who are active. There's so many great groups out there. I heard you guys talking to Indivisible and so many others, Swing Left. I just wanted to let you know that Now is still here, and we're still fighting for women.
Well, I couldn't have said it any better. Can you give us one last time that website?
www.canow.org.
And just to remind my listeners that everything that is said, any website, any information we give, you can always find on www.womenspaces.com. Well, Kalika, any last words for us before we say goodbye, before I say my last words?
No, thank you so much for having me. You guys have been amazing. I hope that we continue to unite, grow, and celebrate all across California. And let's take it into 2020.
I say, hey, sister. Well, that's it for our show. A special thank you to Kalika Siegel, President of California Now, National Organization for Women. And also, thank you so much to Sabria Briere, one of the leaders of Indivisible Sonoma County. A reminder, there will be rallies across the nation in support of impeachment will be happening on Tuesday, December 17th. You know, and remember, if you want to find out more information about what the protests are going to be, there's a website. You go on Google, Nobody is Above the Law events. Reminder, Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. tonight. I'm available for speaking engagements, and I look forward. This is Elaine B. Holt, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
Knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life, the woman in your life, the woman in your life is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, December 16th, 2019.